Hello, I'm your host today, Erica, on Catch the Flavor Youth Radio. We spoke to the Minister of Citizenship and Immigration, Laura Albanese, when she arrived to our center last week on Monday, November the 6th. We talked about the generous grants they provided and the issue of immigration in our community. So here's the clip of that interview.
I'm your host for tonight, Diamond.
With us today, we have Minister Laura Albanese from the Ministry of Citizenship and Immigration. So, welcome.
Thank you. It's truly a pleasure to be a guest on your show.
It's truly a pleasure to have you with us today.
Oh, thank you. Likewise. I'm thrilled to be here.
So, Region Park Focus was funded for its Civic Solidarity Project, a community dialogues and youth media broadcast initiative, which is to result in four resources for radio and TV, highlighting two community events, such as democracy talks and anti-Islamophobia panels. This grant will build our capacity to engage and train youth, strengthen community partnerships, and empower newcomers with information to make change in their communities and have their voices heard. So, what is the Multicultural Community Capacity Grant Program?
So this is this program will provide a small grant. Mm-hmm. It's not a huge grant that can help community-based organizations build diverse and inclusive communities. I think that that's the important aspect of this grant, and it's really meant to address gaps and any barrier mm-hmm. that a community or an individual may be facing, and so it encourages, let's say, social integration, volunteerism, or better understanding.
Yeah.
Great. So, why is this program so important?
So this program is important because Canada is built on immigration as a country. Mm. Except for our indigenous people, we have all come from somewhere else in the world. But at the same time, we need to make sure that people and communities feel connected to each other, and that our newcomers have, in any community, any ethnocultural community, has the chance to participate fully in every aspect of the life in our province.
Mm-hmm. So, what are you hoping to achieve through this program?
What I'm hoping is that community-based organizations will be able, through this program, to help people and to advance projects that can make a difference and enable community groups to have better community involvement and community engagement. Again, it is meant to make a difference in trying to overcome gaps, barriers that people or communities may face,
mm-hmm.
and to promote better understanding.
So I understand that in many parts of the world, even parts of Canada, this idea of multiculturalism is under attack. So why do you think this is happening?
So I think, first of all, that in Canada and in Ontario, multiculturalism is beyond an idea. Multiculturalism is a fact here. Because we, as I was mentioning just a few minutes ago, we have come from different parts of the world to live in Ontario and live in Canada. But sometimes, especially in the times that we are living, even at a global level, it's a time of great change. Mm-hmm. It's a time of enormous amounts of people that are moving through the world, and are whether they're escaping war or other tragic situation, famine, and they're moving in mass.
Yeah.
And sometimes the receiving and like the other people that are receiving them feel I don't want to use the word scared, but when you don't, when you're facing something that is not familiar to you, you may react in a negative way, and I think that that's what's happening. Unfortunately, I believe that the majority of Canadians and Ontarians do not feel that way. We have welcomed a very high number of refugees last year compared to what our norm is. Mm-hmm. And I've been truly impressed with the people of Ontario and their generosity, the way they're still helping people, help them integrate. That's because whether we, you know, some of us may have come a few years ago, some a few decades ago, a few generations ago, but this is something that we know is familiar to us, the immigration journey and what it means to settle in a new place, in a new country, to make new friends and new connections. And as a people, I think that the majority of Canadians are very welcoming people, and we should be proud of that.
What do you think we as individuals and as a society can do to confront this?
Well, I think we can extend a hand. I think we can respect each other. I think we can show friendship and promote better understanding. In my opinion, when you start understanding what the differences are, why they are there, then everything becomes more familiar. And so that's where I would start, one-on-one, extending a hand.
So I understand that you, as an immigrant from Italy yourself, what attracted you to Canada? What advice can you offer to newcomers that come?
Well, my family, as many others after the Second World War, had immigrated to Canada for a better future. And then in my particular case, my parents decided to return to Italy. When I was older, I came back with my husband, and we decided to live our life here and to form a family here because we thought that Canada would offer a better future to us and to our children. The advice that I would give to newcomers, when you first arrive in the new country, a new city, everything is new. And there will be obstacles, there will be challenges, especially trying to, I think there's two issues that you face when you first arrive. One is finding employment, the right employment, the one that is for you. And the second one is making friends and missing less what you left behind and sort of expanding your connections here. The advice that I give them is not to give up. Not to give up and to continue trying, continue believing in what you originally came here for. And determination will assist you. Will assist you. And I hope that most people who come, if not all, can at the end of the day say, this was a great decision. This was a good decision for me.
As a former broadcast journalist, do you have any advice for aspiring young new makers at Region Park Focus, home to RPTV and Regent Radio Regent?
So, I don't want to sound like a professor, but my advice would be, first of all, be led by your curiosity. Curiosity is really important, I think, because especially in the media field, whether it's radio or television, that can lead you to better research, to better knowledge, and that helps you do a good interview, put a great story together. In an interview, it helps you getting to know the other person. what you're trying to do really is to make sure that the person you are interviewing can get to be known by your listeners.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're led by your curiosity, you will ask better questions, you will get a better answer, and you'll have a better result at the mm-hmm. end. So okay. that would be my first advice.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Minister Laura Albanese. Am I pronouncing that right?
You're pronouncing that perfectly.
Because that's actually one of the advice they give in journalism school, right? Always pronounce the person's name right.
That's true.
So thank you so much for helping us with the funding for the Civic Solidarity Project, Community and Dialogues and Youth Media Broadcast Initiative. Again, this is to result in 4 resources for radio and TV, highlighting 2 community events such as democracy talks and anti-Islamophobia panels. This grant will build our capacity to engage and train youth, strengthen community partnerships, and empower newcomers with information to make change in their communities and have their voices heard.
Well, thank you, and congratulations on being one of the first recipients of the grant.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so that was the interview with the Minister of Citizenship and Immigration, Laura Albanese. So we have steadily moved to be where we currently are, whether it's 5 years ago or 500 years ago. We are all immigrants, and Regent Park's earliest immigrants were post-World War II families. Those were those of a British, Irish, or Jewish heritage. Another influx of immigrants didn't come to the Regent Park community till about the 1970s or the 1980s, and this community has been diversifying ever since. So today we have with us Genevieve Ramach from the TD Learning Center. Welcome, Genevieve. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
How's the weather going for you? Season?
You know what? I actually look forward to it because I want to hibernate, and I'm good. I'm good with like the cold, and I'm good with the dark, dark skies. It's weird. Everyone's like, I want summer.
I know. Just like, I feel you.
No, I want everyone to go away, and I can go into my little cave.
I feel you. So just to start off, speaking on caves and niches and whatnot, how did you get into your role at the TD Learning Center?
Okay. Well, I got into this role. I mean, it's been a long time coming just because of my interest. I studied humanities at York University, loved learning about different cultures and different religions and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Graduated, then left and peaced out to Australia. Decided to come back a few years later, and I knew I always wanted to work for a charity, but I didn't know how to get into that, so I was kind of just working whatever jobs, and then I was really low on money, and I went to one of the City of Toronto employment
mm-hmm.
Services, and they recommended I apply for Ontario Work, so I did, and I used their Investing in Neighborhoods program, and that's how I got in.
Awesome, yeah. Awesome. So just moving on up then.
Yeah. In like a really unexpected way, because I started off 3 days a week and then the admin lady left. So I was bumped to full time and I was just like, whoa, wait, I'm working full time at a charity. How did this already happen? Like this was supposed to happen like 5 years from now. I mean, yeah. I'm really glad that it happened, but it happened way quicker than I expected, which I'm really glad.
Okay. So what does your role entail specifically?
Okay. So I'm Development and Communications Coordinator. So what I focus on is our image and reaching out to potential donors, maintaining our relationship with current donors, as well as just getting our name out there and reaching out to create more partnerships. And I don't know, I just want to kind of switch it up and do things differently than what a lot of charities do. I want to get into the grime of it, the honesty of it. So,
you want to get into like the trenches of it.
Huh? Yeah, yeah.
That's the best place to be.
It is. It's dirty, but it's fun.
Always. So you mentioned sort of making connections and partnerships, but it's sort of an offbeat question, but I'm going to ask anyway just to sort of get your take on it. So what has this role taught you about welcoming newcomers and the services that the communities provide? Specifically when it comes to the TD Learning Center?
Right. That's a great question. I've realized that it's so important just to have these programs, but to also cater them for those who don't know a lot of English, might not know any English, need childcare, mm-hmm. need transportation. That's one thing we really strive for at the TD Center of Learning and at the Center for Community Learning and Development. We really want it to be accessible. So for every program that we have, we always offer TTC tokens, childcare, mm-hmm. or if we try to at least, if the funding's there. Okay. But yeah, TTC tokens, childcare, interpreters, because that's so important, and just to have that knowledge or that language base already takes away from that fear that I think a lot of newcomers have when they come in.
Yeah, the uncertainty of it.
Yeah, and I didn't realize it, you know, because I'm, my mom's family's been in Canada for 400 years, so it's not, you know, I haven't had that new experience. But, you know, I think about it and I think, wow, these people have just arrived like last week or, you know, a few months ago, and they brought their whole family and they mm-hmm. have to start fresh. And it's so surreal for me. And so I really noticed that need for community. And I also see religion as a big part of it. A lot of people get together at the mosque or at church, and I see how important that is for them, that link back home. So
great. So my next question, you touched on it, but just expand it a little more. So you originally came from Cornwall, Ontario, correct?
I come from all around Ontario. All around. I'm not. Okay. I finished high school in Cornwall. My Cornwall friends will be mad at me, but I'm not from there. I'd like to say I'm from Ontario because I've been moving around.
All right. Well, they'll be glad to know you gave them a shout out.
So yeah.
Go Cornwall.
See you all.
So how does your upbringing differ from what you see in the Regent Park community?
Well, I grew up on a farm, so that's why I'm not actually from Cornwall, because I spent the majority of my youth on a farm, so that's definitely a bit different. I mean, we do have the Riverdale farm nearby, but to live in the country is so different. I lived in a 1,000-person farming village, so to think that those in Regent Park are growing up in the city is kind of mind-boggling to me, because I've never experienced that. And I mean, my dad is an immigrant, but he's not a visible immigrant, right? He's from New Zealand. So
oh, okay.
I never had anyone ask, where am I from really? Or, you know, why does your dad talk funny? Or why does he love seafood or anything? Like, never, mm-hmm. you know, it's always been, oh, your dad's from New Zealand. He has a cool accent. So that I feel is probably a pretty big difference. I mean, I can't speak to that, but I have noticed that being white definitely has a lot of privilege. And that's something that I've noticed also being in Regent Park and just being in Toronto as well.
So my next question is, what brought you outside of, well, we can't say out of Cornwall because you're all over Ontario. I respect that. So what brought you sort of being all over Ontario to sort of the Regent Park community specifically?
Because of, to be honest, because of this program, because of investing in neighborhoods, CCLND needed a admin and organizational development person. So I came in and I had never been to Regent Park ever before. So before 2015, I mean, I would bus past mm-hmm. On the way to Cornwall to see my parents, mm-hmm. but I had no idea what went on. And it's really quite strange to me that I, you know, went to York for 4 years, never went into this area. And then even for the few years that I was in Toronto before I started working in Regent Park, also never really heard of Regent Park, didn't know anyone who had come from there. So it was a fresh start for me. And I have to say that this community has been the most community I've ever felt, ever. Even from a farming village, you know, like mm-hmm. there's all those old I don't know, rivalries and stuff. And I'm sure they're here in Regent Park too. But the welcoming and kind people that are in this community just blow my mind. And I really feel connected and supported. And I always want to give that back. So I'm really grateful to this community for that.
Okay. So you did, I mean, thousand person farming community village. That for me, I grew up in Toronto all my life, so I couldn't fathom growing up in a place like that. But then to sort of see how you came to the Regent Park community and you've noticed community and everything's different for you. How have those two places and sort of how has that contrast sort of opened up and your perspective in any way?
I guess it's shown that, you know, a lot of people think, oh, the city, everyone's cold and doesn't care for you, especially Toronto. Toronto definitely has that reputation of no one looks at you and everyone just hates you. And I mean, yeah, you don't just open up your arms to everybody here. It is different. Mm-hmm. But I think once you start showing how much you care and prove, not proving yourself, but, you know, caring and going out of your way to do things for the community, that's when people notice. Because I did notice, I didn't just walk in and everyone's like, oh my, welcome.
Yeah, that'd be weird.
yeah. Whereas like in Oakfield, I mean, my parents kind of had that because, well, it's a small community. So they were much like, yes, of course. But then, you know, for me to come in, it took a little while to just kind of gain trust from others. That was an experience for me. But I feel like once you've gained trust, like you're in it for life, you know? Like I know that the connections I've made here are not going to diminish if I leave, you know? That's really special to me. And that shows how important trust and attitude is in this community. So
yeah, trust is a really big foundation for everything.
Yeah,
once you have that, you can sort of go anywhere and solidify a lot of relationships and a whole lot of contacts.
Exactly.
So that's really important. It's really important. So what are the main issues in Regent Park that hasn't occurred in your upbringing all over Ontario?
So what occurs in Regent Park, yes, that I have never like really noticed before?
So basically, in contrast to your upbringing, the question basically what I'm asking, in contrast to your upbringing, what are some issues that happen in Regent Park that you haven't noticed when you grew up?
Violence is one. I mean, we did have police officers come to our school and show us these things, and I used to be afraid of gangs. Small dairy village, and my class was like 30 people, you know, but because they would like, oh my gosh, it's happening everywhere, and so, you know, and like drugs and stuff, and that never wasn't, I mean, it was an issue, but I'm sure it was very like hidden. So that's one thing that I never had faced before, even not in my upbringing. And also just seeing how much it impacts my coworkers and my friends. Mm-hmm. I have lived a life relatively free of any like upfront violence, you know, but this was the first time that I experienced that. But I mean, But then I see how the community reacts, and that's also something that I've never seen before. You know, like doing the peace walk and, you know, reclaiming those spaces for safety. And I think that's so powerful and so important. And it does make me sad that, you know, others have this idea that Regent Park, you can't even walk through it, you know. And I had no idea about that until I came here, and then, like, people who've grown up here were telling me, and I was like, what? Like, you know, so that's different for me. Also the issues of, different cultures being together and everything like that. I mean, again, I grew up in a very white community. Mm-hmm. I mean, we had like Protestant and Lutheran churches, you know, but, there was no obvious, hatred towards another because of their religion. Mm-hmm. So that's been something different, as well as making space for women who do want to feel safer, whether it's swimming or exercising. I've never noticed that before, but I think that just might be a whole trend in general. Mm-hmm. Again, we didn't also have a gym in Cornwall or Oakfield. I mean, no, in Oakfield where I lived, in this 1,000-person village. In Cornwall, they definitely have gyms. but, you know, I think, like, in that small village, there was, like, only, like, the school gym. And, you know, a lot of people have lived there for centuries, whereas, like, you know, Regent is kind of shifting. It's always like waves coming and going, right?
Yeah, in contrast to those, in contrast to places that have been there for centuries, Regent Park is fairly new, just coming up out of World War II and shifting it. So even me, I was thrown when I read that because I thought that it had been here for a while.
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
Exactly. But even that, there's still a lot of community. So
okay. Yeah. Okay, so... How do you facilitate and welcome newcomers and immigrants at the TD Learning Center when you haven't experienced that yourself? You do mention that you grew up sort of not having people ask you, oh, where you come from or the questions of that nature. So how do you mitigate your lack of lived experience?
Well, I've been lucky enough to be around the learners who talk about their experiences when they get the chance for different programs. Mm-hmm. So listening to that is really special for me. So, yeah.
Okay. Okay. So is there anything else that you would like to add or share about the TD Learning Center or social services profession in general before we wrap up?
I just want to talk about the Immigrant Women Integration Program. I think that's a really successful program with CCLND. One of the past participants, Amal, she started the Anti-Amal Community Center. And another alumni, Maria Arteaga, started a Spanish class. So just giving that leadership and power to these women really gives them that encouragement to keep going. So
great.
I highly recommend that. And I highly recommend just you stopping in at the TD Center of Learning, which is at 540 Dundas Street East.
Awesome, awesome. Our listeners will gladly have that information on our blog. So Genevieve, thank you so much for coming by to hang with us and talk with us today. It's been great. And your own experiences coming to a new community. All of the programs at the TD Learning Center are free of charge and anyone can easily sign up. Stay tuned because coming up is next is Diamond Bailey and a panel centering on e-cigarettes.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Catch the Flavor, the show that talks about the issues that matter to you. Today's discussion is about e-cigarettes. Do they help people stop smoking or is it more addictive than the regular cigarette? The study of more than 44,000 grade 9 to 12 students in Ontario and Alberta, published last month in the Canadian Medical Association Journal, shows a strong and robust linkage between so-called vaping and subsequent tobacco use. With the urgent matter at hand, our thoughts on the big question, is this a matter of causation or correlation? Welcome, you guys. So, what are your thoughts on smoking and the use of cigarettes, as well as the growing trend of vaping amongst youth today?
Well, I find right now, obviously, well, my current thoughts are that they still have those cigarette packages with those images that's supposed to make you not take cigarettes to smoke. So I'm actually new to the idea of what is e-cigarettes actually.
E-cigarettes is like, do you know what vaping is?
Yes.
That's what it is.
Oh, okay.
It's the same thing. It's just the more academic term for it.
Oh, okay.
Vaping's more of the slang term.
Oh, okay. I thought the vaporizing cigarette was a pipe. And the e-cigarette was something that...
No, it's E stands for electronic, so it's like the same thing.
Oh, okay.
So you put the liquid in, and then it turns into vapor.
Oh, okay, I get it. Yeah. Well, I I never knew that it would be that addictive. I thought it was a safer solution because I heard that there's a solution in it that's called, it's a kind of oil.
Yeah.
I forgot the name of it. But people smoke it to obviously relieve any kind of stress or for leisure or activity. And yeah, so.
Well, yeah, like here you saying you thought it was a more safer,
less
solution. Addicting.
Yes.
Yeah. But it does also have nicotine in it.
Yeah.
So they use nicotine, which is a drug, which is highly, you know.
Oh,
yeah, that's
okay.
What's in it. It's highly addictive. So,
okay, I did not know that.
So
wow.
There's a study that says that youth that are taking these e-cigarettes and vaping, there's a link that towards later use in tobacco smoking. So they go from vaping and using e-cigarettes to later smoking and using such drugs like marijuana and drinking like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Bethel, do you have any? Beverly?
Yeah, I think it's just more addictive than like a cigarette.
Mm-hmm.
People may think it's like safe, but it's not really.
Yeah. So you think it's more addicting?
Yes.
Because a lot of people feel like it's a better alternative than to smoking?
Yeah, I feel it would be better because of the chemical properties. There's tar in cigarettes.
Yeah.
And certain issues that make your lungs turn black. Mm-hmm. I thought that if you use an e-cigarette, you don't have those issues to deal with, like lung cancer and many other cancers of the throat that people suffer with. So
yeah, it also affects your hands turning to black and your lips turning black.
Okay, the smudging or
it's like
stain. Charcoal. Look.
And your teeth, especially your teeth.
Turns brown.
Yeah.
Okay.
What about you, Joel? What are your thoughts and opinions about the use of youth smoking or smoking in general?
It costs a lot. The money is a huge factor. Mm-hmm. When you're buying cigarettes in general, you have to show ID, and I guess with e-cigarettes, you don't have to show that much ID.
That's true.
You know, so you can just they'll just sell it to you just as is.
Mm.
And there's no... You basically need nothing.
See, I never knew that. I thought that just as when you buy cigarettes, that you would have to show ID for buying e-cigarettes and things such as that.
Well, with cigarettes, with e-cigarettes, no. With regular cigarettes, yes, because it's still, I guess it's still like an age limit you can of smoking, but with e-cigarettes, it's a more healthier alternative. They have vape lounges all over the city. But I guess you don't have to be underage to vape. So that's just... I think for smokers, it's a good way to help them get off the cigarette because you're causing less harm to the body. Right? But with cigarettes, you're causing more harm to the body, and you're most likely... It increases the cancer risk.
So you believe that it's a better alternative?
I would go yes.
Yes?
I would think so, yes.
What about you, Beverly and Joel?
Yeah, I'm pro yes on that. Yeah, even though it's a bit addicting.
Why? Why do you think? Do you think there's other alternatives that would be better than using e-cigarette and vaping than using a cigarette?
There's the patches and the chewing gum, but sometimes those don't work, I think, for others. I know there are multiple other choices too, like marijuana that some people choose to use because they felt that if it's a herb, it's pure. Yeah, it's medical. It's medical. It's pure. It's relieving. It relieves certain pain issues for those that are fighting certain diseases or illnesses or any kind of stress in their life.
Mm-hmm.
But I know it's a controversial topic because I've heard before that if you take marijuana, it can... well, if you have a certain like mental illness, it maximizes your symptoms more,
mm-hmm.
and it's a struggle to deal with because if you're taking it to relieve yourself, but at the same time you are you're taking medication, it could be like a battle within your body actually. So, mm-hmm. yeah.
Well, in saying that, do you guys personally believe that there is a connection between vaping and smoking a cigarette and the later use of drugs in the future? Or do you even believe that is the causation of later drugs use? So the people that actually use e-cigarettes, not really talking about people that don't, but the people that do use e-cigarettes, do you think it is a causation or is correlated to later drug use?
I think it depends on... the circumstances, like the environmental concerns and the internal concerns of a person in terms of what they're dealing with. I think when it comes down to it, people who do take smoking doesn't necessarily mean that they will go into drugs later. Sometimes it's the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will probably have done drugs, but they changed to smoking or they've mixed those two together. So I feel that there isn't really a strengthened path to smoking leading to drugs, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it could be interchangeable.
Correlation?
Yeah, correlation.
Beverly, do you agree?
Yeah.
Or do you disagree?
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, because when it comes down to it, people's lives start out in different ways in terms of how they choose something to
mm-hmm.
to make a choice of. So, yeah.
Joel, do you think it's related, cause or causation, or correlated in any way?
I have to agree.
You agree?
I agree with that statement.
No one's arguing for the sake of argument?
No. Well, I guess if there's an argument about it, you could say, well, it all started with advertisements.
Mm.
And then when advertisements came into the family setting, it came into the classrooms and it came into your
yeah.
environments and now it's in your hand and now it's in your body and now it's in your mind and
it's
then
influences.
Yeah, influences.
Especially if there's like celebrities doing it, they're like, oh, that looks cool, I'll do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so you're saying it's more peer pressure?
Yeah, peer
pressure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stress, especially when you're in school and you... or you're with a group of new friends, you just want to, like...
fit in.
Chill.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. Like, look cool, right?
Yeah.
The image of coolness.
Yeah.
Well, saying that, what do you think makes e-cigarettes appealing towards youth? Is it just a fad that will die out soon enough, or is it more than just a fad? Is there more to it?
I think there's this image of, you know how people smoke? They make a puff and you see the puff come out in this like format. I think in a way, some people would think that's appealing. They want to be cool
yeah.
in a way where they look serious while they make that first puff or that last puff.
Yeah.
So, because you see it in images a lot.
Yeah.
And it could probably be a kind of brainwashing sort of situation for others to think, well, maybe if I try something like that, I'll look as cool as that person on TV. Or
like you guys were saying about the media, there's a lot, like social media, there's a lot of like videos on Instagram, I realized. There's a, like, there's a, because, you know, Instagram being a very popular platform
yeah.
right now after, like, you know, Vine died out and all this
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, if you notice, a lot of videos where people vaping and doing, like, tricks
Tricks.
Tricks. Apparently there's tricks.
Like air.
Yeah, like.
Oh.
Yeah, tricks with. If you see it, you see it. But it also, like how you're saying, how you see celebrities doing it.
Yes.
Or a lot of people find it cool, this, you know, image of I smoke, so I'm a bad boy, I'm cool, I have this persona, you know, that's attached to it, which we see in a lot of books and
movies
and things like that. Mm-hmm. So in saying that, do you think people are social, people that view social media, people that create like things and share things on social media, and when it comes to movies and shows and like that, do you think they have a responsibility of, even though they have, like, let's say movies, even though they portray a character like that, do you think they have the responsibilities to make the hazardous health side effects aware, so aware to the viewers?
It's really about choice, though. They chose to do that, and they chose to do it.
What about you, Joel?
There's one movie that comes to mind when I think about this, and that is Alice in Wonderland.
Alice in Wonderland.
Yes, and I'm going to tell you why. And the reason why I mention this, because...
Is it that caterpillar?
Yes. Yes.
I don't know its name, but, like, yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Okay, the caterpillar started this all.
Oh, you mean the one with Johnny Depp?
No.
No. Is it Disney?
Yeah, it's the Disney cartoon.
The Disney, yeah.
I strongly believe that the tobacco companies took that image and made it vape. I kind of see the connection. And yes, it's a cheesy reference, but it holds true. I strongly agree with Beverly on this one, because media has a huge, huge impact on what we do and think. Now, if you get that caterpillar, like, say, an apple, or the caterpillar did exercise, thousands of people will be losing weight. No, I'm serious. You see the connection? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Right.
But I do think, like Beverly said, even though media has influenced people, it's still your decision.
Yes.
You know? Like, you may be influenced, but you decide to go further.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're shown something, but it's your choice to go beyond, to implement it, right? Mm-hmm. Implement into society. So I understand fully what you're saying.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But how many people want to think for themselves? That's a very key question here. How many
children.
You see, the children are a prime example, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, media plays a huge environment of children's lives, too. And it's huge.
Yeah. Because I still remember when my dad used to smoke, I was like only 8. I thought it would be cool, and then I almost tried it out.
Exactly what I'm talking about. Okay.
Well, like you said, your environment shapes you.
Yes.
In society.
That's what I believe.
Yeah. So, environment-wise, what are the pros and cons that e-cigarettes have on the environment versus regular cigarettes that may be used as an excuse to support or go against the use of e-cigarettes?
I guess the pollution.
Maybe. Pollution?
Yeah.
Yeah, pollution's a big one. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people say, like, that it's, what do they say? That it's cheaper. It's not as expensive.
Or is it not harmful?
Because if you think about it, when you buy an e-cigarette, all you need is to buy more of the vapor, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
When cigarettes, you have to buy pack after pack after pack. And and it's way more expensive. Like, it gets more expensive every single year.
Yeah.
So
people are spending like $30, $40 a carton, and they're talking about, I'm talking about like the big cartons, like the 36 huge, like where there's like 9 in one package, and people are actually smoke that off in less than a week.
See, I don't smoke, so I don't know like how they sell it.
Okay.
So I just know that it gets expensive over the years by what I'm told when I was researching, and that it's, over the long run, it's cheaper.
Yeah.
What are your guys' opinions? Pros and cons of using e-cigarettes versus regular cigarettes?
Well, I wanted to think back to how somehow smoking itself was obviously advertise a lot, but there's also cultures mm-hmm. that smoke for yeah. different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it affects youth too in a different way in terms of family background, like you saw maybe in Futurama, there was a somewhat alienish Aboriginal setting where
peacemakers, right?
Yeah, the peacemakers.
Yeah, yeah. yeah.
And it kind of made you merge, you know, the idea of how youth would see smoking as something different than just the advertising on the movies. It would be something advertised in families in terms of connection or trying to have like an understanding between two groups.
Mm-hmm.
So it made me think a lot about how it's changed now, where we are using e-cigarettes as a health change.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I'm losing track of where I'm going with this. But
take your time.
Yeah, but. Coming back to the pros and cons, I think that it's definitely a pro, but I know, as you said, the con is something related to the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also the recycling factor of what happens to the materials when you have to throw away the e-vapors and the chemicals that are released in the air, the ozone layer, and
because to add to what you said, mm-hmm. I feel like people forget that even though we are trying to cut down the use of smoking and using cigarettes as it's not good for the body, right?
Mm-hmm.
They need to realize that it's hard to cut off something that's been so implemented into society.
Yeah.
I feel like this is just a step to kind of get people to draw off of cigarettes. But in saying that, it does have a negative effect, as the study says that it is linked to actually going back to smoking cigarettes and tobacco and using marijuana. So I feel like as a society, we're still growing. We're still trying to find out, you know, what we can make and use to go about trying to change, right?
Yeah, trying to change well path we're on, I guess, to expand our horizons.
So just as cigarettes companies put warnings, like how you were saying, on their packages, do you think that e-cigarette companies should do the same thing?
I totally think they should.
Mm-hmm.
I think if they put warnings, it'll have the reader, the audience, the...
let them think twice.
Yeah, let them think twice, yeah. Mm-hmm. About why they're using it, what it's for, and... The health benefits and the health issues and the environmental issues you're dealing with when you're using it.
Mm-hmm. And also, like, labeling what's in it, because not a lot of people know what's in it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So do you think as individuals we can combat this issue? What can we do?
I think education is needed
mm-hmm.
a lot. In the product design of it, like when you see a product on the shelf, you want to know everything about it enough to know why you're using it in your life
mm-hmm.
and how it can be a benefit or not a benefit to you involved with that. Mm-hmm. Also, education in classrooms would be a good thing, like presentations by individuals who make the product that can talk to the PTA, the Parents and Teachers Association,
mm-hmm.
on why this product is being sold and what its issues are, so that parents will have an understanding of it and
mm-hmm.
children will be aware of something that they've seen.
Yeah.
So they know that it's not something they should approach, given the fact that most parents tell their children you shouldn't do something and they don't give them a reason why.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you give your child the chance to understand the product, it would have a big influence on their life to know that it's something that they shouldn't use even at an early age.
Mm-hmm. So we're all out of time for our show. We thank our lovely panel for joining us today. Thank you, guys. Come back next week at the same time and same place for another edition of Catch the Flavor Youth Radio here on Radio Region. Stay tuned because coming up next is Murphy Brown, which you don't want to miss.